Shoes. Recorded live.
All right. Good evening, everybody. We're going to get started with tonight's program. I'm a little under the weather. I got the flu or whatever it is, or a bad cough, so I may sound a little funny and cough from time to time. But in any event, a couple of things. Just a reminder, our website is newyorkcommittemen.org. That's CommittemenN.org. And anything, pretty much anything we talk about here, we do have this up online somewhere. And people should, maybe join up our group. You can click on join, and we do have a meetup group where we have communications by email for anybody interested in conversing. Also, it sends out reminders of what's going on, different things, especially when we're doing a court case. So tonight, and one other reminder, once I unmute everyone, anybody that's coming in by phone, some people are just listening in online in the text chat area, but once we unmute anyone that is coming in on a phone, do click, and I'll remind you of this when we open up the phone lines, you click #6 to mute yourself and #6 to unmute yourself. So when you're not talking, you should have yourself muted so we don't pick up any background noises or we don't get any problems, interference or anything from over through your mic. Tonight we want to just really quick take a quick look at some U.S. code, talk about some U.S. code. I'd like to say I've put out a couple of reminders in the past week concerning our meeting, and I mentioned things about guns. I was kind of surprised at some of the response I got. It's kind of alarming, as a matter of fact. Some of the people actually on our list were so much against this idea of anyone trying to stop the government from coming out to prevent assault rifles. I had someone call up a couple of times, and they got real nasty with me and were calling me a murderer or part of the whole thing because I was for keeping guns legal. They didn't want to hear the argument or the position, the fact that, first of all, it's our right to have guns, and second of all, the main reason for having an assault rifle is to keep the government in line. That's why they want to take our guns away, obviously. But I did get about 5 or 6 people at least that have sent some nasty notes and told me to, remove them from the list. So I did so, of course, and they're no longer on our mailing list. But I was just kind of surprised to get that kind of a response from, the email list that we have and we've been collecting over the years of people that appear to be in the Liberty Movement. And so amongst us are still some people who don't understand the Constitution, don't understand our rights, and doesn't understand the dangers of what's going on here with this government trying to remove our guns. But anyway, one of the things I want to go through tonight, just to spend a little time on, is U.S. Code, and then we'll open up the conversation. U.S. Code is key for us. It's very important to realize, first of all, that code or statutes, whatever you want to call them, they're not written for the people. Although they have written codes for people, and people have obeyed them, and they continue to write in codes, and people continue to go obeying them, thinking it's law because they're ignorant to the process. But one of our strongest protection against the judges to force them to do the right thing is using U.S. code against them. We mentioned this last week at our case. We brought up code, and the purpose and the reason behind that was to kind of alert them that this is where we're going. And so they were very attentive to that and made some notes and so on. But we do kind of threaten the judges, even in our regular papers on the trial level. Not a direct threat, but in other words, we alert them to say, let them know that we plan on suing or going after anybody who doesn't protect our rights as people. And so we usually put that in the footnotes of our papers just to signal them. And these are the kind of things I want to go through real quick is some of the things that code has given us the power to do. And remember, we always knew, and we probably will continue to be this will be the case, we always knew we were going to lose our cases on the trial level because it's so corrupt. It's far more corrupt than I ever thought that it would be. But it's so difficult to win on a trial level. Anytime you're going up against the state or against the status quo, the judge just is not going to give it to you. And they don't read the papers anyway. If they did, they'd be frightened maybe a little bit to go against us. But anyway, they do. And it's on the appellate level that we expect to get our power and the right conclusion. And, you know, when you go to the appellate level, there's two appeals in the New York Supreme Court level, and then there's the federal. We can go into the federal courts. So these judges know there'll be other judges that will hear this case. They also know, if we alert them and let them know, that we plan on suing them personally if they become do criminal actions, if they don't prevent the law from being broken, if they don't do the right thing. And so this kind of puts some leverage on them to do the right thing. Also, I think a lot of these appellate court judges really do want to do the right thing. And that's my impression. But we'll see how things go as time goes on. One of the main things, again, we mentioned this last week, is that we made the point to the court numerous times in our case when we were arguing before the appellate court. And in the last 20 seconds or so, we made the point at the very end again that all we're asking for is for the state to obey the law. And it's incumbent upon the court to force that obedience. And one of the codes I wanted to look at, let me see if I can find that real quick here. One of the codes which we did mention at our court case was U.S. Code 42, subsection 1986. And by the way, all these codes and everything we talk about, like I say, is up online. We do have a course on common law, and in that course we have files, and in these files that you download, we do have a file that focuses in just what we call a footnotes. And when you open that up, you'll see all the codes, U.S. code, New York codes, all the important codes that we've been using, and also definitions and court cases and case law and supporting different positions that we've been arguing and fighting for the past couple of years. And I'm going to be updating that shortly because I've put the code section a little better than what it is exists right now. Once I update it, those who have gone up there and downloaded this course, they could, you know, we'll send them an email out and we'll let them know of the update, and it'll be a better file with broken up a little easier to find and some new files, you know, because we're always adding files. So we'll always be updating. But anyway, the U.S. Code 421986 says that every person who, having knowledge that any of the wrongs conspired to be done or about to be committed, and having the power to prevent or aid in the prevention of the commission of the same, and neglects or refuses to do so, if such wrongful acts be committed, shall be liable to the party injured. And this is one of the strongest reasons that I bring up, the points that I'm making, that I don't think they're going to rule against us, because we quoted this code to them so that they understood, that we understood, they have a duty. And when the law is being broken and the rights are being trampled upon, which is exactly what we're talking about, what we're doing up in the courts, and we're injured every single day and every election period, and all the people of the state of New York are injured as long as the state does not obey the law to allow the people to come in as the elected committeemen. And so they're going to be held responsible, and we do intend on suing them should they rule against us. We'll continue to go up line, but we will, I think we'll probably launch our lawsuit after this decision if they go against us, and we'll run it at the same time we pursue the appellate system, and that may put the people up higher on an alert also. We have two judges on the trial level we're going to sue in this, because they definitely committed a lot of criminal acts, and you know, one evening we'll sit and talk about all the criminal acts that they've committed against us, the people. But anyway, these codes are very important to know, very important to bring up from time to time in your court case, for anybody pursuing a court case. And usually the best place to put it is in your footnotes. Make some points, and in your points, you know, you put a footnote on it, and then the judges, at least on the appellate level, will read this stuff, and you'll get some action. But let's look at this. U.S. Code 18, subsection 201 on bribery. Okay, this I found very interesting. Of any public official directly or indirectly gives, offers, or promises anything of value to any person to influence any official act. So, you know, anybody, any of these people that we've elected to office ultimately, if they've received money from some special interest group in order to go vote a certain way or something and support their positions, well, that's bribery. And it doesn't matter what they call it in Washington. In common law, it's bribery. And then we're going to start applying that once we get into power. We're going to let our congressmen know that they're not no longer to take money from special interest groups, at least not for some favor. They're not to meet with them and to discuss things because we don't want – they're expected to be there to do the people's will, not the will of the corporation. All right, anyway, conspiracy against rights, U.S. Code 18, subsection 241. If two or more people conspire to injure, oppress, threaten, or intimidate any person in any state in the free exercise of enjoyment of any rights, they shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. Okay, and so this is the things we put in our footnotes. It's important for them to know, to remind them of these codes and let them know we know these codes. So we have an intention of doing something to apply the law. U.S. Code 18242, deprivation of rights under the color of law. Whosoever under color of any statute or law, ordinance, regulation, or custom willfully subjects any person in any state to deprivation of any rights shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. This particular one here is very important to realize how powerful this is. You know, if you were to carry a gun and you were arrested for carrying a gun without a permit, well, they're going out against you, against your rights, under the color of law, under statutes, which say you can't carry a gun, and that's what they are, statutes. And as long as people continue to obey statutes and don't resist them and fight those statutes saying they're not law, well, we're going to be continuing to losing our rights on a daily basis. You know, the Patriot Act is code. It's statutes. It doesn't apply to me. They can't come and, you know, blackbag me, so to speak, and haul me off into some prison and not tell anyone. I mean, yeah, they can do it, but they have to understand that, you know, people on the outside are going to do some work in the courts to get me back out on the one hand, plus we're going to take these people and put them in prison because what they're doing is committing an unlawful act against one of the people. And so we need to start letting these people know that they can't be doing these things. And most of these people that do arrest you, they don't have a clue, and they're kept ignorant for a purpose so that they would do these things to break the law. But once they understand by us fighting back and they start to get sued and they start to go to jail, their buddies are going to realize it, and word's going to get out very quickly and they'll stop. But not until the people stand up and take their rights and exercise their rights and starting to push back saying, no, you do not have jurisdiction over me. Remember, in order to have jurisdiction, there has to be an injured party. Otherwise, you cannot be brought into court under any circumstance for any reason. There has to be an injured party. U.S. Code 18, subsection 245, whosoever under color of law interferes with or attempts to interfere with any person campaigning as a candidate for elective office shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. I wish I was aware of that code when we started this process because we'd have a couple of commissioners in jail right now. And we'd also have the state commissioners in jail right now because we would have pursued this right here. But once they took our papers and changed our titles or prevented us from coming into elective office or denying the fact that it exists, they are now guilty of U.S. Code 18, subsection 245. Another one, and this is a big one for the IRS, and I just recently applied this to the IRS in a case that I'm doing, U.S. Code 18, subsection 341, fraud through the Postal Service. Whoever, having devised or intending to devise any scheme or ruse to defraud for obtaining money or property by means of false or fraudulent pretenses for the purpose of executing such scheme or ruse, or attempting so to do, places in the post office or authorizes depository for mail matter, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 20 years or both. And that's what the IRS does. The whole thing is a fraud. You know, we have broken the code on the IRS, and we're fighting them back, and there's a lot of people out there fighting them back. And that's one of the things that's going to be used against these people, is the fact that they're using the U.S. Post Office in order to defraud us. U.S. Code 18, subsection 2071. Whosoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys, or attempts to do so, any document filed or deposited with the clerk or officer of any court shall be fined or imprisoned in not more than 3 years or both. We've had two judges already pull papers out of our files and send them back to us, trying to clean or cleanse the files. We will be bringing these up when we go to court, when these two judges, one of them is Teresi. U.S. Code 18, subsection 2076, clerk is to file. Whosoever being a clerk willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law, shall be fined under this title or in prison not more than 1 year or both. Many times we've had clerks refusing to take our paperwork, not wanting to file, and we press the issue, and here's what we would use against them. This is the code that they have to obey. Remember, codes and statutes were made for the people who are employed by the government. It's for the bureaucrat. It's for the elected individual. It's for the state or agencies. They're the ones. That's what code is written for. It's law to them. And we can use those laws to them and actually sue them in civil courts or have them arrested and have them imprisoned for violating our rights. And by the way, these things are never, ever, or very rarely exercised because people go to court with lawyers, and no lawyer will ever exercise or push any of these codes. You have to go. You have to fight your own battle. You have to learn how to get into the procedure and work the procedure, how to get into the system, and you have to exercise these codes. And that's why they fear us. You know, people ask, we haven't won many cases, or, you know, what's going on? Well, we haven't been doing it all that long, but we have won cases because, you know, we've had situations where people were arrested or going to court or dragged into court, and eventually the cases are thrown out because the judges start to realize what we're doing and they start to get frightened. So those are cases won, even though we don't actually win them, but we did win them because they left us alone, or the people that we're fighting for. let's see. Misprison or of treason. U.S. Code 18, subsection 2382. And this word, misprison, I was looking for it. I couldn't find it in the dictionaries, but I did find it, of course, in the legal dictionary, Black's 18, I forget what year. But in any event, it was the fourth edition. And misprison means contempt against the sovereign. Okay? So whosoever having, this is U.S. Code 18, subsection 2382. Whoever having knowledge or treason conceals and does not make known the same to some judge is guilty of treason or contempt against the sovereign and shall be fined under this title imprisoned not more than 7 years or both. U.S. Code 42-1983, civil action for deprivation of rights. Every person who under the color of statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage of any state subject or subjects or causes to be subjected any person within the jurisdiction thereof of to deprive them of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution and law shall be liable to the party's injury in an action at law. You could sue for whatever amount you think is necessary. Of course, you've got to be reasonable and you had to prove your case and show some reasonability. You know, a reasonable payment that's accepted by the courts for a long time now for going to jail is between $25,000 to $50,000 a day. So if you went to jail for 10 days, in theory, you know, $250,000 to $500,000 is an acceptable suit. Of course, if you're in jail for 3 years or 4 years, you know, the numbers get so big, and then I'm sure you can go for a few million. I know someone we're working with, we're looking at $5 million, and they were in jail for 4 years. Let's see, I got two more codes I just want to pick up, and then we're going to open up for a conversation. This is what I read. No. Okay, U.S. Code 42, 1985. Conspiracy to interfere with civil rights. Okay. If two or more persons in any state or territory conspire for the purpose of depriving either directly or indirectly any person's rights, the party so injured or deprived may have an action for recovery of damages against any one or more of the conspirators. U.S. Code 42, 1986, action for neglect to prevent. We read that earlier, so I won't read that again. All right. Anyway, it's important that we realize and understand what these things are. You know, when people read our cases, they may think, oh, well, there's way too much for them to learn, and, you know, how do you get all this stuff? And I've been collecting different things for years, the Supreme Court rulings, so I kind of have them listed out, and I put them into notepads, you know, different cases focusing in on different violations. And basically, when I write a case, I put it into a file, which I call, footnotes. And so when I make my case, I just make my case plain on paper. And then I go into my footnotes and I start pulling out the cases that apply or define a particular word or a phrase. And it's that simple. And usually it's the same thing they're doing. They're violating our rights. Excuse me. They're violating our unalienable rights. You know, anybody can do this if you just put some time into it, and we put everything into a way, to share with people on how they can get into the court system and through the procedures. You know, we put it all in there in a way like, you open up a file to use it as a framework of your case. You find a case that maybe fits your case as close as possible, and then you just change the facts and some of the details. But pretty much the codes and different violations you can use and you can add. Okay, with that, I'm going to unmute everybody, and give me a second. Okay, everybody is unmuted. If everyone can mute themselves by hitting #6, and then when they want to talk, just hit #6 again, and then they'll be able to talk. But the mic is now open, and we're open for questions or comments to some of the things we're looking at here today. But we're open to questions about anything we're doing. So if anybody has questions on the judicial process, or they have questions on court procedure, or questions on these codes, or questions on the committee man process, or comments they'd like to make, go right ahead.
Well, I've got a question. You mentioned that there were some specific cases that you won. Could you expound on that?
Well, again, you know, I define the fact that winning is leaving the courts and not having to go back.
Right.
We had a situation in family court, for instance, and once we started to push back on these people in the common law, and they started to realize what was going on, and within 3 weeks, we were out of those courts. They just wanted us out. And anybody who's ever ended up in family court, they know it's almost impossible to get out of their claws. They keep you there for, well, until your children are 21, you'll be in those courts. They want total control. We're working on another one that's very close to the same thing, kind of an out-of-state case. There's a situation with a gun permit. Really wasn't a gun permit, but it was an illegal gun barrel or something, went to the barrel. And they were arrested with an unsigned warrant to begin with. But they played their games, and at some point they just threw the case out. They gave it a different reason, but we got out. We have a case that I think we're going to be very close to be getting out of out in Niagara County. I don't know if Dave's on with us and might want to talk about it. But he's got the same kind of a situation. They're trying to put him in jail over a sign. Okay, in jail for a sign. Can you believe that one? Well, we're real close on that one, I think. I think we're going to throw that out real quick. We have another one where a woman's house was taken away from her and sold. We went out after them. I mean, hardcore. We went out after the judge and everybody. And they withdrew the sale. They voided out the sale. We're not sure where they're at right now, but they did void out the sale. So she hasn't been thrown out. The house wasn't taken away from her. The sale did not go through, even though they did sell it. And right now they defaulted on our papers, And we're in the process of filing a default, which we're looking for about $5 million for this woman. And this is a 76-year-old lady. You know, she's got some health problems. So she's not doing very well, and they don't care. They're willing to throw out in the streets. So that's some of the cases. We have a lot of the cases we haven't finished off yet. Contract case. We have a couple of IRS cases. We have another case we're just taking on where someone who had been to jail for 4 years, and we're going to be suing, helping this guy to sue for $5 million, plus they've taken his Social Security from him. They've taken his pension. They don't allow him not a dime, even though he's out of jail. He's not able to collect any of these monies. And that's illegal to begin with by their own rules. You know, if they come after your Social Security, they can only take a percentage of it. They took it all. We have a lot of successes in the sense that they want to get rid of us. But we're working on some other successes. I think we're going to have a success on our big court case up in that's for the appellate court right now. We have another one coming up to the appellate court probably in the next month or two, and that's a court of record case. That's where our successes are at this point. I think if you're arrested and dragged into court and beat up, so to speak, not physically, but, you know, they take control of your life, and we can get them to release you, even though they'll give some crazy reason or they'll just not call you no more, just dismiss the case or whatever, I think that's a win. So some of these people we're going to sue, though. We're going beyond that point now. We're going after money. So anyway. Any other questions or a follow-up on that one?
John? Oh, yeah. Go ahead. I had a question on to follow up what you were just talking about. How do you not give up your jurisdiction in an arraignment process before you even get to the court?
Well, that's a good question. Because they try to shove it down your throat, you gotta push it back at them, and they intimidate you, and you gotta give us this or that, you know, or they'll make the rule for you, and you know, we do have a tape up there, you know, let the record show that the judge has become my attorney or something, you know, you can do those things. We've written a couple of papers on this for different cases, and we've been involved with this enough times now. And it's the same game they play in every single town court. It's the same rules, and it's the same response. I'm getting ready to put a paper together, which we'll post up online. I mean, people might want to kind of keep it in their back pocket if they're ever arrested. They pull it out and just write the information on top of what court it is and file it, say, hey, let me out of jail, or leave me alone, or go away, or whatever. Just file that paper. Usually when you have a situation, you know, you're given a court date and you got to come back. Before you go to court, you want to write a paper. You don't want to speak in court. You want to write a paper and let them respond to the paper. They're going to do everything they can to push it back. You push it back at them. Look, it's an uphill battle. They're going to continue to break the law. What you have to learn is what the law is. When you understand they can't give you your papers back, okay, they can't push them back to you. For instance, the removing of a paper. We read one of the U.S. codes. You want to bring that up. You can't just give me my papers back. They also try to say, well, you're incompetent. We'll have to have a special trial for your competency. And they'll do one of two things. They'll try to force a lawyer to fight your case for you so they call you incompetent. Again, if you push back, they can't do that. The main reason they're doing this for is to say, well, okay, you see, well, we tried to get them to take a lawyer, and we had a special case, you know, special hearing to see if he was competent, and he's representing himself, therefore we can't be held liable. So that's one of the reasons why they do that. And then they think they can continue their criminal activity and not be held accountable. But they're all wrong. They're wrong. They're right in the sense that people don't push it. Lawyers will never push it. You have to go in yourself, and you have to push it. They don't like when we come in there. You know, anybody that comes in there, if they know what they're doing, when they learn the system, they know what's happening, and they know the law, and we upset the apple cart, so to speak, and they don't like us there. They really want to get rid of us. And that's good. We want to go home. So, but anyway. Any other questions or follow-up or anything?
Well, I've got a question about this bill pending in Albany for gun control.
Right.
What purpose do you feel military assault weapons serve? What are they used for?
Oh, the purpose is to let the government know we got them, period.
No. I'm talking about the physical use of them. Are
yeah.
they...
The physical use of them is to protect me against them.
So in other words, somebody's breaking in your home, you would hit them with an assault weapon that can fire up to
30. Well, if I have a handgun, I would. Okay, I'd use a handgun. But if they didn't give me a permit, and there's a situation, no permit, okay, I can get a rifle, I can get an assault rifle, and that's what I have. That's
okay,
what they went down with. You could pull the trigger once and just take one bullet out.
You don't need a permit for a .22 long-range rifle.
You're absolutely right. But listen, you sound like you're the person who called me up earlier today. But I'll tell you. Huh?
I am, and I know.
Okay. I'm going to tell you the answer to the question, but you're not going to be happy with it. The purpose of any assault rifles that any of us might have is just to be there. Because when they come out for us, then we could protect ourselves. That's why they're trying to take those guns away.
No, they're trying to take them away because military assault weapon has one purpose only, and that is to take human life.
Can
I weigh in here, please?
Please, go ahead.
Long hands,
all right.
Like Anza,
my name is Comicus. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Comicus. You can call me Tom. I'm from Monroe County. Semi-automatic rifle, as you like to call assault rifle. Actually, it's a misnomer. It's a bad term. An assault rifle is a select fire rifle that fires a medium cartridge, which are illegal according to the 1934 Firearms Act, first off. Okay, secondly, not only is it applicable for hunting with a 5-round magazine, which is perfectly legal in New York State, but it's also the only thing that stands between you and a tyrannical government. If you really can't understand that.
Okay.
Besides that, it is our right to have a gun. If you don't want one, don't get one. Don't take my right away because I have a right to have a gun. And
sure.
I can
go
see
out and
clearly,
buy as many rifles and shotguns
clearly.
And revolvers as you want.
Well, listen, I can see clearly. We have a very good government. The structure of our government is excellent. The problem is that we have the enemy has infiltrated our government and is in control of an excellent government, but they're using it to come out against the people.
Who is the enemy?
There are people that have conspired against the Constitution. Anybody in office that assists in the writing of any bills that is unconstitutional is the enemy, and they need to be removed from office. And when we
okay,
become the committee,
limiting,
men, we
limiting
will do
a magazine
that.
To 10 rounds is not unconstitutional.
Well, I think you should have. I know people with clips of 30 rounds. I mean,
I know.
I think, hey, that's fine. Look at, but that's what they're afraid of.
Can I just
no,
say something?
No.
Say something.
Well,
will not infringe. What part of will not infringe do these politicians not respect? And that's the
okay,
point.
Okay, listen, lady. Did you know Lieutenant Michael Ciparini or Tomasz Kałuszka in Monroe County, the two firefighters that were gunned down on Christmas Eve by a assault weapon? Did you know any of the 20
No. They were not gunned down
detail?
By an assault weapon. They were gunned down by some people. Some lawbreakers. That's what they were gunned down by.
Right, and if he didn't have the assault weapon that he had, he wouldn't have been able to kill them that easily because he would have had
true.
To stop to
when
reload.
When they take away the assault weapons from the people, the criminals will still have it. They don't obey the law. They'll get them. They got them, and they're going to continue.
Oh, no, those guns had been legally purchased by a young lady who was stupid enough to hand them over
who
to a convicted
doesn't
felon.
Matter. They will have it anyway if they want it, and I don't believe the story anyway. I don't think it's a real story. I think a lot of this stuff is phony stuff.
You don't think those two firefighters are dead?
But they very well may be dead, but I question
they
you may
have killed
them. Well,
they
I
are dead.
Them,
and
but
if you
I'm
don't
not going to sit
me,
in an office.
Then call 585-872.
All right, look, well, if you have a question.
Wait a minute. Wait, John, please.
Yeah.
This is in my backyard, okay? This happened like 5 miles from where I live.
Go ahead.
All right. The one guy, the lieutenant for the Webster Police Department that was a volunteer fireman, my wife knows very well, okay? These people were both supporters of the Second Amendment. I don't think this gentleman knows the true story, okay? This guy that shot these men, murdered them, he was a murderer. He was convicted of murdering his grandmother with a hammer.
Right.
Because the fine and the punishment for murdering his grandmother with a hammer was less than the punishment that would have been handed to him because he was running a meth lab. Okay? Do you understand
this? Mm-hmm.
Okay?
And he just got out of jail, too.
No, he's been out of jail for a while, but he was just left.
Okay,
his
but
PO,
my
his
point
officer.
Is that no matter what he had done,
he
it
was
doesn't
the problem.
Affect my rights.
He's an evil man.
Yes.
Okay? He's an evil man. This guy in Connecticut is an evil man that's probably taking serotonin uptake reinhibitors that are on these huge psychotropic drugs. This kid from Aurora. Okay, let's stop looking at the fact that this rifle caused the issue, because gun ownership has gone up and crime has gone down in this country. Those are facts. You can't debate those. We can stand here and call each other names all day,
right,
but the facts are the facts. And guys like Piers Morgan, who stand on the graves of these poor children from Sandy Hook, are pathetic bullies that are trying to ramrod their agenda, and this will not be tolerated.
Right.
Well, I agree with your position. I don't know what's true and what's not true. I hear a lot of stories, and I'm sure some of these shootings, or maybe a lot of these shootings, are real the way they're saying it. And some of them, I think, are setups. I'm not saying that people didn't die. I just don't know the truth anymore because I can't believe the media. I go out online and I listen to stories out there, but I know there's a lot of BS online too. But at least you get the opportunity to hear both sides and you try to figure out what truth is. It's a shame. You know, when I was a kid, I remember years ago, you couldn't report something that wasn't true because you were liable. Okay. Today, half of what we're hearing is all designed to bring us into a certain behavior, a certain state of mind. So I really don't know what's true or not, but you're absolutely right. I agree with your position. And so you're saying this is a real story. Okay. I could see that possibility, of course, it could be real. I'm not going to deny every story, but we agree on the outcome. It's not the person. I mean, it's not the gun. It's the person using the gun. I mean, people kill people with cars because maybe they're driving drunk or they're just driving haphazardly. Should we take cars away from people? Of course not. Same thing with a gun. So, but you and I agree anyway.
John, 15 years ago when I met my wife, she was really leery about guns because I've been a deer hunter for years, okay? So I put a book of matches, a hammer, and a gun on the table, and I asked her to tell me what the difference was. Well, she said, well, this one can kill you, and that one starts fires, and this one pounds nails. I said, wait. I said, they can all kill you, and they're all tools, and they can sit there for 1,000 years and not do anything, okay? So to blame an inanimate object and to associate that with human emotions is absolutely wrong.
That's correct.
And,
you know, there's another issue here.
She was totally down with that after that. You know,
first of all, the assault weapon had nothing to do with two firefighters dying. A bolt action rifle could have taken out 10 firefighters if it's aimed. I mean, semi-automatic. What's that?
So could a pistol. So could a musket. So could a baseball bat.
That's
so could
right.
a hammer.
Well,
so could a rock.
Walk up and actually do it. When a gun, listen. Don't bring a baseball bat to a gunfight. Okay. The gun is the great equalizer. But and we have a right to have guns. Now, whether it's semi-automatic just means it shoots every time you pull the trigger until the magazine runs out. Anybody that knows how to aim and shoot can kill one person at each pull of the trigger if he knows what he's doing. Sergeant York went and took 100 German troops with a bolt action like British infield. And every time he shot, somebody fell. And he took 100 German soldiers prisoner with a bolt-action rifle. So this business, this is just an emotional business. Assault rifle, it's all bullshit. You know, but they have fights in the city, and they shoot 100 rounds between the cops and the gangbangers. They had one where they were shooting at each other, and nobody got hit because these guys don't aim these guns. Anyway, it's just a ruse to take more rights away because they don't want us having any kind of guns. If you follow Australia, you follow England, you follow how they implemented.
I hope all of you encounter some lunatic someday who's got one of these, what I call a semi-automatic or an assault weapon, and you're standing there with your handguns or your revolvers or your rifles.
Look at we get it that you're against this, and that's fine. You don't have to have a gun. But you can't say I
put a little bit more bullets down is all it can do.
That one baby in Newtown was hit 11 times.
Excuse me, sir. 11 times
in a six-year-old body.
Do you realize that the initial reports were incorrect?
You believe that? I can't believe anybody on this call believes anything from that story. I mean, all you have to do is sit there and watch it for 2 seconds. The initial report comes out and says that all these kids were murdered with pistols.
That's correct.
Pistols. Then the medical examiner says they were all killed with a long gun. Then they find the alleged long gun locked in his damn mother's trunk.
As a matter of fact, you're right, and I just want to just elaborate your point. Our governor, Cuomo, did not even use the Sandy Hook incident in his assault weapons rant a couple days ago. Because he knew that those reports were inaccurate.
And how convenient that all of a sudden the politicians need to push this issue right behind UN trying to confiscate our guns.
Exactly, and it's the same thing with the Batman shooting. I mean, anybody who has handled any kind of these weapons can tell you, for somebody to go through a theater or a school methodically dumping clips and dropping them back in, it's just unreasonable, especially some skinny little 20-year-old twerp. It's not going to happen. I mean, anybody who believes this is just absolutely insane.
Just imagine what would have happened if there would have been some people in there that were packing a gun. That, you know, then this guy would have been shut down real quick.
I mean, have you noticed that these shootings always happen in gun-free zones where nobody is going to be having a gun?
You know,
that theater is loaded with police.
Well, my only regret, can you guys hear me?
Of course, yes.
My only regret is that these people aren't going after Second Amendment people.
Railing about these automatic rifles. I would like to ask her.
It's the Second Amendment people that are keeping you safe.
They had videotape in this school. Where's the videotape? Okay, if they want to take our guns, okay. You know, let's look at this logically. There's two shootings now where there's been cameras that could have shown the shooters, but none of this videotape is being released. The same thing happened with the Pentagon. They're 9/11. They didn't release a damn thing. The most videotaped building in America, and they won't release anything. And the men of this country sit around and go, I don't know, maybe it's a conspiracy, or when are we going to get it through our heads that these people are the devil's children and that what they're doing is trying to systematically disarm us so that they can come in and genocide us?
Can I just
go look at Bolshevik Russia?
Can I just say something? I'm the daughter of a Hungarian revolutionary. Okay, I was born in 1956 in January. In November 6th of 1956, my father was fighting against the communist takeover in Hungary. What the communists did was they rolled in the Russian tanks, and from the tanks, they were slaughtering people that were walking on the streets.
Yep,
my father
exactly.
was there. He was one of those people who the Army was feeding the guns and ammunitions to, and him and his buddies, because he was one of the students, were fighting against the Russian to the point where the revolution was crushed, and he had to run across the border to Austria. Now, my bottom line is that because the Hungarian people lacked guns, they couldn't fight against the government, who decided
exactly
that they were going to come into Budapest and with those tanks slaughter people on the streets. It happened. And, sir, I don't know who you are, but if you don't think that a government can do this to you in America, then I suggest strongly that you look at some of those documentaries from Budapest, Hungary, 1956, and the only reason I'm here in America is because of that event. That's all I have to say.
Hey, listen, they were able to beat the Russian tanks, the Afghans, using gasoline bombs. God forbid one of these guys decides to come in with a bunch of Molotovs. He'd burn more people, kill more people. So maybe we should outlaw gasoline in glass jars. Because
actually,
that would do a whole lot more damage than one assault weapon, believe me. Can you shut the door?
When it comes to tyrants, all you have to do is look back throughout history. And every time that a tyrant has taken over, gun control has been the preceding impetus for his takeover. Pol Pot, Adolf Hitler, the Hungary, China as well. That's 20 million Russians, what they think of gun control. You can't, because they're all dead now. Gun control only works for people that want control. It's not about the guns. It's about control. Now, all I want to do is ask you one thing. If you want to be honest with me of what your actual end game is, then we can have a discussion, okay? Is your end game to just eliminate assault weapons, or is it to remove all weapons?
No, just military assault-style weapons and high-capacity magazines. Now,
okay,
before I go any further,
right,
tell
right
that lady two things. Number one, I'm a female. I'm not a sir. I'm a ma'am. I don't have a penis, but I do have breasts. Number two, go back to Hungary. You think it was so terrible for that slaughter, don't you? But you don't think 20 innocent babies being slaughtered
all right
is terrible?
Well, we don't have to continue this conversation. I think we need to move on to another subject.
Right.
Everybody in this room pretty much agrees, with the exception of one person, concerning guns. And you, just because a person doesn't want guns doesn't mean that we shouldn't have guns.
I didn't
it's
say
our,
I don't
it's
want
our
guns.
Right. It's not our constitutional rights. It's our inalienable right to be able to protect ourselves. So anyway,
I never
we're going to move to the next subject.
Guns.
Does anybody else have any other questions or comments
and
on the items? On the things that we're here for.
Ian,
we're here
don't get one. Don't get one. Leave other people's constitutional rights alone. Period.
Yeah, John.
The story.
Yeah, let's move on. Anybody have questions on the judicial process or the political process or the things that we're working on? You know, one of the things where the conversation was starting to go when we first started talking about guns, I think, was, you know, what are we going to do about it? What can we do about it? And I'll tell you, I was thinking about launching a lawsuit. I think it's too premature for us to launch a lawsuit, but a lawsuit's going to take a while. I think we can win the court case reasonably quick, and reasonably quick would be a year. And that's kind of long, a little too long, more time than what we have, I think. But the other thing is being successful in the political process that we're pursuing to take control of the political parties. We then will have the leverage and the ability to set things straight on a legislated level and to command them. We, the people, command them to leave our guns alone. As a matter of fact, we're going to push real hard, and we will be successful once we get in, to get rid of any kind of a permit for a gun. there's nothing wrong with them running a background check maybe on someone, see if there's someone just got out of a loony bin or something, unstable or a criminal or something of that nature. But they don't need to wait months. That could be done immediately. You know, when you get all pulled over by a cop, they know immediately whether you're a criminal or not, whether there's a warrant out for you or not. They know a lot about you. They already know you. If you don't have your license, once they run your name or your plate, they already know. They ask you your name. Oh, they know the driver's got a license because they already ran that, you know, a license to drive. They already ran that. So if you don't have one, you know, they're not going to arrest you for that because they know you got one. So they should be able to run that check quite quickly, and people should be able to get guns, and nothing should be restrained. You know, New York City, if we want to stop this government from coming out and bringing in martial law and coming up against the people, let's make guns legal, which should be, to the people in New York City. And believe me, crime will go down, and they wouldn't dare think of going into New York City to try to enforce any kind of an unconstitutional move towards the people at all. And that's how we stop these people. Let the people have their guns, period. So anyway, anybody got comments on that?
Yeah, a couple things occurred to me earlier in the day. In terms of the recall process with the current legislation, what would be like some good people to, I don't know if target is the right word, or to use as examples? And how does that recall process work even without the committeemen being recognized?
Okay,
there's two ways.
There's two ways to exercise the recall. The first and best and the way that works well, the best really is through taking over the committeeman process and the committeemen deciding to do it, because no one's going to be able to stop them. You know, just the fact that the people get in to take over the political process by becoming the committeemen, just that alone is going to put them on call. It's going to they're real. And once we give them a little bit of a lecture on the way things are going to be now, believe me, they will become obedient. Even the guys that are our worst enemies, selling us off the worst, even those people will start doing the right thing because they know what the right thing is. Right now, they're doing the thing that you know is the political thing, what the politics are telling, you know, the people running the system, the committeemen that are not elected that's in the system, they're doing what they're telling them to do, what the bosses, the party bosses are telling them to do. So once we get in, they'll do what we're doing. I don't think we're going to have to recall many, but if we do, and I'm sure we're going to have to make a few examples. If we do, it's a 90-day process. We go out and walk the papers for recall, and it takes 90 days to get them on the ballot. And then the people will call them out. And then we put out a lot of campaigning, you know, all the committeemen. We'll have access into all of our election districts, and we'll put out the word, we're recalling this guy because of this reason. And they'll go to the voting booths to make the decision. And that's how you recall someone. Now, there's another way that can be done, and that is by a grand jury. But the person has to break the law, and they already have broken the law. Any one of these politicians are breaking laws. I mean, you can find out real quick. The fact that they're taking money and doing things for that money, that's breaking the law, and that could be easily proven. The fact that they're going for things that are unconstitutional, that's breaking the law too anyway. So there are two ways through that process. 25 people who are the grand jury can stand up and indict, and on that indictment, pull them out of office. So that's a second way, but that's not as efficient, or, you know, that'll cause a big argument. I mean, forget about it. The news would be going crazy. And so the best way to do it is through the political process.
Right, but barring that, and then this other process with the grand jury sounds like it could be tied up in courts for,
yes,
who knows how
exactly
long.
Well, it can and it,
is there
it may,
else that
it
we
may
can
and
do?
May not. That depends. You see, all of this depends on the people. If the people want to be free, we could be free. If the people don't want to be free, then we're not going to be free. Unfortunately, a lot of people are not responding. I know we're trying to get the word out to people, you know, to get active. Now, what's active? Active is standing up and saying no. No. When these people come and say this, we say, no, you don't have that jurisdiction, and challenging that jurisdiction. Yes, it's an uphill battle. That is true. Right now, it's an uphill battle. But you will win if you stick to your guns and you push the process through the whole system. You will win, okay? And once we have a couple of wins in this county, a couple of wins in that county, all the judges will be alerted, and all the prosecutors will be alerted, and then they'll start obeying the law because they're not going to want the consequences that comes down upon the people who refuse to give the people what's right, justice, because we're going to take their money. We're going to take their houses, their cars, whatever we can get off of them, and if necessary, we'll put some of them in jail. And when the other judges see that happening, they're going to think twice before they come out after the people. You know, when a government fears the people, we have liberty. When the people fear the government, we have tyranny. And right now, unfortunately, the people are fearing the government. If we all stood up and at the same time and just said, no, we understood our rights. We understand that statutes are not law. You don't have the authority over me. We have jurisdiction over you. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution for you. You have to be obedient to us. That's what people have to realize. That's freedom. And when we all do that, believe me, we'll have the system back. And when we do that, then a grand jury can stand up and the judicial system would go along with it. They would not argue against a grand jury. Actually, they can't argue against a grand jury. It's common law. But it would be tied up and probably the news, you'd have a big problem in the news because the elite control the news. You know?
So. Oh, yeah.
Hey, John.
Yes.
This is Dave in Michigan.
How you doing, Dave?
Are you familiar with Schaefer Cox?
No, not offhand. I know of a couple of Coxes, but I don't know a Schaefer Cox.
Schaefer Cox, Google him. Watch the video of his talk in Montana. His wife is from Montana. He's in federal prison from Alaska.
Uh-huh.
And it's an outstanding citizen. He has taken the concepts that you have to the hilt and have made it clear in Alaska, where he and his wife and his children live, that he will not accept anything but justice. And he's the most clear spokesman on what you're advocating that I know of, without having the knowledge you have about the legal process. What he did is he established a Liberty Bell system in a precinct. And the system was that there was a central number you called that went through him. They'd push a button and it would call everybody in proximity to where something was going down that shouldn't. And the system was working perfectly. Of course, it's upsetting to the judges in both state and federal, but eventually the federal authorities on the U.S. Army post, even though he'd never been in the military, gave him refuge from state authority in Alaska. Then there was the situation where he went to court and made it clear based on the people in the courtroom that he was in a position to, in effect, arrest the judge.
Do you know if he understood a court of record? Are you familiar with any of that?
Well,
because
you know,
a lot of people are fighting this battle and they're having a harder time than they would have if they understood a court of record. And I know that Thornton, the guy who we've been learning from, I know Carl... if you're on the line, you may know this. I know Carl, he brought someone up that was in jail or had a problem that was on the right mark, but they didn't know or they never looked into the court of record. I know there's quite a few well-known people who are fighting the right battle, but they have not looked into the court of record. And, you know, it's a 50-50 chance on whether they're going to win or not, you know, but the court of record is one of the key things.
I understand, and I'm not in any way wanting your listeners to believe that you're on the wrong
right.
track.
Right.
However, your listeners should know that and this man has climbed Mount Everest 3 times. He left home at 16. He worked on the fishing boats. He would spent 6 months in the wilderness with just enough food for 2 weeks all by himself, even though he was there 6 months involuntarily. surviving the elements in the middle of January in central Alaska. So this is not a guy who is, and he's not a big hulk of a man either. I mean, he's a very ordinary man, mm-hmm. It just saddens me to think of him in jail for a long period of time based on what's gone down. But that's not why I'm talking about it. I'm talking about him because you need to listen to Google Schaefer Cox, all of you. Google Schaefer Cox. Listen to his lengthy presentation of how injustice is being done by our alleged courts of justice. And he's probably not as knowledgeable as you are, John, about mm-hmm. instructing courts of record. That seemed to be his weak point. However, his strong point was that he could organize things and make it work from the bottom up in a very reasonable way in which he was gaining enormous respect. I mean, he ran for the legislature in the state of Alaska and lost by just a couple of votes. Mm-hmm. This guy is no schmuck. You know, he's not some ne'er-do-well.
Well, I do appreciate that. I did make note of his name, and I will Google him. But you are absolutely right. There is some risk to what we're doing. There's no doubt about that. There is nothing more frightening than ignorance in action. And when you get in a courtroom and you get some judge who's ignorant, literally ignorant to what we're talking about, and then they get a bug up their rear end, and next thing you know, they get you for contempt, and you're in jail. So, sure, that could happen. We try to be very careful, but anything can happen.
You're having said that. Let me give this example of ignorance in the courtroom of those in the courtroom who are professionals. Whenever I meet an attorney, especially if they are a prosecuting attorney or assistant prosecuting attorney or someone who tries cases, that kind of attorney, I always ask them, where'd you go to law school? And they're happy to tell me. Then I ask them if they had ever, if when they went to law school, if they ever studied the Constitution. And they always say yes. And then when I ask them further, did you study the Constitution or Supreme Court cases departing from it? I ask them. And they said, oh, no, we studied Supreme Court cases. So then I say to them, have you read the document? Have you ever read the Constitution? If so, when? And for most people, it was in fifth grade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty sad out there when you go to law school and you don't even cover the Constitution. My brother went to law school, and he's now working for the post office. He doesn't practice law. But he went to law school, and I quizzed him about that, and he said, they talked about the Constitution, but they never taught us anything about the Constitution. We never looked at the Constitution.
I want to know of these people who were doing justice if they ever took a test on the contents of the Constitution.
Well, when we go to court and we argue a case, okay, we discover they argue statutes, which is not law, okay, and that's case law that it's not law. We argue common law, which is law. We bring in constitutions, maxims, the Magna Carta, and we even bring in case law. And we also use statutes when it applies to the bureaucrat. But they don't understand what we're doing. They're totally clueless to what we're talking about. They can't even mount an argument against us. That's how bad it is. And all these lawyers, they are not educated in the law at all.
I understand that, and they don't understand it, and yet they're in the position to make decisions, and they will depart from the Constitution through their ignorance. Obviously, if the last time you read the Constitution, for instance, was when you were five, were in fifth grade, and you've never been tested on the contents of it, the only exception to that is if a person who goes to law school and wants to be specialized in constitutional law, well, then they study the Constitution. But that's a special class for those.
And they teach them how the communists or the Nazis interpret it. I mean, their interpretation is distorted. you know, and they play games with the meaning of something. But you know, this problem stems from the Bar Association. Once they started getting into the licensing process and the Bar Association, and then the Bar Association took control of the schools, and once they took control of the judicial schools and what's going to be taught and what's not going to be taught, that's it, game over. But what we're going to do as committee men when we come in, we're going to bring the common law back. We're going to require that the first order of business when a case opens up, people should be assumed that they're the people and not a U.S. citizen, which is the big game here, by the way, but that the people are people, and this has got to be a common law procedure. Even if it is a judge making a decision, it's got to be a common law procedure. And that judge now, under a common law procedure, is now going to be liable when he commits a criminal act against the person that's going into the court system or when he oversteps his jurisdiction. Now he's going to be liable, and that's where we got to get to. Right now, when you go to court, you're automatically presumed under the civil system. It's a nisi prius court, which is all about statutes. I remember the last time before our argument that we saw, the last time we saw Judge Teresi in a courtroom, he was saying to us, well, I can't find a statute for that to allow that. You know, that's what he lives on, statutes, okay? You know, statutes are, it's a nice rule maybe to some degree, but once it violates your freedom and violates what's going on, you know, it's no longer common law. It doesn't make any common sense to begin with. So, you know, you have to do the common thing, the common common sense thing, the just thing. But that's the only way we're going to turn this around. And again, the committee men, by the people taking this process, we can correct all these problems, all of them. And we can literally solve each problem literally, or almost, overnight. You know, within literally weeks and months, change a system. But it's up to the people. They got to get educated. They got to understand this, and they've got to come active.
Anyway, that's all I had.
Anybody else want to pipe in on this? Any other comments or questions on any of the subjects? Nobody else has anything?
John, this is Hisham from Staten Island.
Hey, how you doing, Hisham?
How are you, everybody?
Good to see you, hear from you.
Thank you. Going back to the case that's in the court now, can you remind us of the timeline and if you need us, those who ran the petitions, to be doing something meanwhile or be prepared for something?
Yes. Yes. I think everyone who is an elected committeeman, we've already put the word out. We haven't got a big response. Maybe people really didn't get it yet or whatever. But anybody who is an elected committeeman that actually ran the proper way should be going up there, because this is a new year. You need to take an oath of office. The correct time for being elected, anybody elected in 2012 for 2013 and 14 needs to take their oath of office. So we have the oaths of office up on our line. I think it's on our, if you go to our judicial page, you could download the, you know, we have instructions. You could download the PDF and send us a copy, and we'll put you in the records. Now, people who want to become a committeeman but were not elected and are willing to run next year, because these seats are all open everywhere, we'll just make sure you don't run in a seat that people are already in, because we pretty much know most of the people who run. You can go up there and you can fill out a paper and take an oath of office, and we'll appoint you, okay, in your county. You'll be working under the wings of people in your county that are elected. But there are some counties where nobody's elected. So you'll be the top authority in that county, at least until the election comes up in 2013 to run for that seat legitimately as being elected. But we are trying to prepare for the filling of all these offices should we get the decision in the next week or two or three. We're hoping for a decision in about 2 weeks now. It was last Monday we went to court. This is the second Monday since. The first Monday since, shall I say. So next week, the week after, we should be hearing something. And again, I feel very, very strong just because of the fact that we made mention of the codes concerning what they have to do if they neglect to prevent the law from being broken. You see, the Supreme Court, we put them on notice when we filed our affidavits. We put sworn affidavits, and no one has said that were their lies. So there's no, there's no rejection of our affidavits. And so we've got sworn affidavits, quite a few of them, and it says that I ran for office and this is what happened. They default, you know, they defrauded me. They changed my the name of my position I was running for, and so on. And we made it clear to them that they were that they had literally stopped people. You know, people haven't been elected for years. Okay. And now they're preventing these people. They're expunging the position. They're preventing them from coming to office. That is that's breaking the law to begin with. It's a constitutional violation. It's a violation of our inalienable rights. And the injury takes place every day that continues, multiplied by the voters are being defrauded and being violated because they don't have representatives in there. They got party bosses representing them. So these judges, they can't possibly rule against us. I just can't fathom the idea of them ruling against us, because if they do, then they're neglecting to prevent the law from being broken again this election time, and the fact that it's being broken right now just by the fact that they're not obeying the Constitution, which says deem those elected who did not have any contest. And none of us had a contest. So we're all elected. There's about 150 to 200 of us throughout the state of New York in both of the parties, Republican and Democrats. And we're looking for a lot of people to step up and take positions. So that's a big thing that people should do now. And they need to bone up and understand on the problems and get ready to start debating and talking about them in our committees to start dealing with these problems. We have to straighten up the sheriffs. We have to straighten up the congressmen. We have to straighten up our state senators and our legislators. We have so much work to do, but people can't go in there ignorantly. They have to understand the problems, and they have to, you know, work. And it's not difficult. You know, it's just a matter of thinking free and applying it. But people have to bone up on it. And
two questions, John. One is, during the conference at Kingston, we were sworn in. Do we still need to be sworn in again?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Go up to the website and download a PDF, and it's a sworn statement. You just fill in your information, take it to a notary, and have it notarized, get sworn in front of a notary. And then you get two copies, send us an original, and you keep an original, and then we'll put you on the list, and then we know who we got to contact when we take control. We're also going to call, as soon as we get in, we're going to call for a statewide meeting, and I certainly hope thousands of people show up, hundreds at least, many, many hundreds at least, to take control of this system. It's their system. They got to stand up and take it. That's why I say every week to people that are in this room, bring other people with you. Let's start building up people in knowledge and get ready to take the power to take back our republic here in New York. And once we take it in New York, we will take it throughout the state, throughout the country.
Okay. The other question, John, is now let's assume that the court would actually rule in our favor in 3 weeks, and then that effectually and immediately gives us control. Concerning the date of the elections, are we going to be up for elections? On the regular 2 year cycle?
Anybody who was elected on 2012 would not run again till 2014. Okay. Anybody that wants to run in 2013 for the thousands of seats that are vacant, okay, can run in 2013, and then they will have to run again in 2014. But we will appoint them as the committeemen right away in order to take control and put it back into the hands of the people. We're going to dismiss all of the executive committees literally overnight, and we will take control of the subcommittees and try to train and teach them the process and, you know, what's going on and the problems. A lot of those people are frustrated, and I'm sure that they're going to be, you know, once they realize what's going on and what the system truly should have been like, and we're treating them righteously, they're going to respond positively, and we will have, I think, a good result from that. And then we have to lead by example. You know, we have to do the right thing. Whatever the right thing is, that's what we have to do. And we really have to do it. We can't do anything that's going to benefit us. We're looking to benefit the people, to benefit the republic. And it's going to, you know, and it's not going to take that long to bring the state back into order. I 6 months to a year, I can literally see easily, I mean, really, right back to the Constitution. You know, we it took them 100 years to bring us to where we're at, but literally, freedom would move through this state in weeks and months and undo everything they've done. We found the Achilles heel. This is it.
Another question, John, is there is a learning curve that, I mean, considering, for example, the argument that took place earlier about guns, there are many people who are absolutely oblivious about any of this, and
right.
The learning curve is somewhat really steep. Is there any way we could, like, for example, have the basics in a page on the website? These are the basics that you need to do. You need to know, like, something to give a synopsis and let the people learn on their pace.
Well, yeah, you know, freedom isn't easy, okay? And even understanding freedom, people think they understand what freedom is, but we're talking about liberty. And, you know, it takes a mature thing. And I bring this point up a number of times. Some people said I shouldn't bring this point up or find a different example, but I think this is a good example, and this is the one I choose. And that is, if someone that lives on my street to the right of me, they want to stick a needle in their arm and kill themselves, they can do that. That's their right. I mean, you know, they're not planning on killing themselves. They're planning on getting high or whatever they're doing, and they die. You know, yeah, we should go over and talk with them and say, man, that's not a good and wise decision, you know, wise thing to do, and so on and so forth. But you can't stop people from doing what they want to do. And that's freedom. And yeah, that's hard. You know, someone who doesn't like guns or something, they don't want a gun. Well, that's fine for them. That's freedom, too. But they have to understand, if I want the gun, leave me alone. That's my freedom. And that's where we got to get to, that point of maturity. That's all we really need to realize. You know, we have to study justice. We have to study the judicial system, because by studying the judicial system, we're studying common law, and common law is our heritage. That's what people have to understand. They keep running away from the judicial process when they don't realize they should be running to the judicial process, not the judicial process in the civil law that's in the courts today, but the judicial process what our founding fathers intended for us to have, which is common law. That's where we need to run. You know, again, I said this, and it's on our front page. You know, when people have been trained, okay, they've been trained, you know, to find God, you got to find a priest first. You know, they're trained that when you have to deal with a legal problem, you go seek out a lawyer. They're trained when you have a political problem or a political position, you go seek out a party. You see, we know you got to seek God out on your own, and you got to seek out the truth on your own. You have to go into the judicial process without a lawyer. Once you go in with a lawyer, you're not going to get justice. You'll get just as much as you can afford, ultimately, but you're still not going to get justice, because it's all going to end at the end in a backroom decision, no matter what happens when you go in with a lawyer. And in the political process, it's all what the party boss says. So we have to realize we have to pick up the slack. We have to relearn these things that we've never learned before. And it really isn't that difficult. I mean, common law really is what is right and just. I mean, it's logical. You work off what's called maxims. And maxims are statements that cannot be denied. For instance, water doesn't run uphill. You know, a thing similar isn't exactly the same thing. Who can argue those things? You know, this is what we have to do. We have to study. We have to learn. We have to be reeducated. If people aren't willing to do that, then as Jefferson said, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be.
John, I'm looking at the chat notes, and I'm getting a little bit uncomfortable with Dark Knight saying that common law equal one race governs and the country was created for and by white people. I would like to hear his, what does he mean by that, because we have so many people in the movement for liberty and for going back to the Constitution that are not white. So what's the situation?
Yeah, I'm looking here to see what is being written. You know, we don't get involved in racial things. There are some things that people might be trying to say, and I'm trying to see what's being written out here, and I don't know. You know, it is true that the, for instance, the 14th Amendment was written for the black man, for the slave, because they were having problems getting freedom in their states. So the federal government created the U.S. citizen. But all that did was move the owner of the slave from a personal ownership to a federal government ownership. Then they tried to get the rest of the people, which I guess you'd call white, realizing also there's the red man, and there were other black people even up in the north, so it has nothing to do with color. They moved the rest of the people, trying to get them to become U.S. citizens. And this was back in 1868. But the people wouldn't have it. What they did is, even though they created the 14th Amendment to enslave the people, they had the black slave who was being, they thought was being freed, really just transferred to a different ownership. But by the time we got into the 20th century, moving into the 1900s, and World War I came to play, then they started to change the educational system. They started to change the history and the history books as we got into the 20s and the 30s. And little by little, they convinced people that they were U.S. citizens. They started to control what was going on in the schools by the time you got into the 40s and the 50s. And that's how they brought us into subjection, and they moved us into slavery. And that's why you're being controlled by statutes, you know, and that's the big problem. Now, anything else other than, you know, we're getting into what, whites or blacks or different religions, I don't know what they're even talking. I haven't even read the text yet. Maybe someone could comment on that who's read that. Gerard, have you read the text yet? Let me be quiet so I can read it. Well, anybody out there, let's see.
Can you guys hear me?
I can barely hear someone trying to talk.
Hey, John, it's Jeffrey. How you doing?
How you doing, Jeff?
Okay, my quick question. How long is it going to take? In other words, when do I have to file my next, signature petition to run for another term as committeeman?
Yeah, you ran this past year in 2012, so you don't have to run again until 2014. But you do have to be sworn in, so you have to go up on the website, download the PDF for the affidavit to swear in front of a notary, and then send us a copy, make two originals and send us a copy for the records, because when we take over, we need to know who's the elected committeemen so we can start communicating with them.
All right, when does this have to be done by?
Well, you should get your sworn-in statement ASAP, today, tomorrow, right now, get it into me. If we take the case over, if we win the case in the next 2 weeks, strong possibility we're going to, by the way, immediately we're going to take power, and it'd be great if we didn't have to sit around and try to figure out who's in power. We should be doing that now.
Okay.
And anybody who wants to take power that didn't run, go out and there is an affidavit up there for someone who's going to be appointed. Just fill out the papers, get it in, be sworn in, and we'll hand it over to the people in control of your county, and they'll make the appointing.
All right. Where do I find this document that you're talking about?
Let me look on the website. I think it's on our judicial page. If you go to newyorkcommittee.org on the left side, you'll see judicial process. Let me see where. Oh, no, it won't be the judicial process. It will be the committeeman process. So click on the committeeman process, and then on the left, on the top of the page, you'll see some tabs. One of them says oath. So click on oath. And then there are two possibilities. If you actually ran a petition and you are, it doesn't matter whether they say you're elected or not. What matters is that you ran a proper prima facie designating petition. And whether they accept you as being elected or not is irrelevant. When we win the case, they will accept you as being elected. We acknowledge you as being elected, and you should acknowledge yourself as being elected because you are elected. Okay? You just need to take the oath of office to take control in the office once we get the sheriff to go and serve the papers for them to obey the law and deem. And then the law that they need to obey and respond to is the New York Constitution, Article 1, Section 1, which says that it refers to a law should there be no contest. And none of us had a contest. In other words, nobody ran against us.
Right.
And so, therefore, they are required by Constitution to deem us elected. And they have not deemed us elected. So when the court order comes down to obey the law, then they're going to have to deem us elected. And then we're in power. And we will take control.
Yeah, I have a couple of other things I want to discuss, not on, nothing that's going to be posted. So maybe I'll try calling you. Anytime.
You know, catch us on Skype during the evenings. You know, usually we're on Skype.
I don't have Skype anymore. Well,
you can call me at my, 6560. Yeah, 6560, I think it is. You got that number, I think, right?
I have it. I do.
Yeah. You can call me that in the evening, and when we talk, if you want, if other people are online, we can pull them into our conversation, you know, in a private talk, you know. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
I hope you get better, by the way. You know,
thanks.
Really,
I appreciate it.
Quite a stinker.
Yeah. Appreciate it. Anybody else?
Yeah. Hello.
Yes.
How you doing?
Good.
Are you a New Yorker? My name is Gene. I'm on the chat room as Gene Art.
How you doing, Gene? Yeah, I'm John from New York, Dutchess County.
I'm Brooklyn, New York. Yeah.
Hey, good to see you, Brooklyn.
Look, I just want to suggest maybe that some you guys might want to read some books in history that kind of describe events in our country, considering the Constitution. First and foremost is The War Powers Under the Constitution by William Whiting. Okay, this is not a conspiracy book. William Whiting was a special war counselor to Lincoln during the Civil War, and he wrote extensively on the War Powers Acts and how Lincoln should use them.
And the name of that book is War Powers.
The War Powers. I'll give you the proper title. Hold on a second.
Right.
It's called The Government's War Powers Under the Constitution of the United States, an analysis of the government's legal powers to fight subversion, treason, and civil war. Okay. His name is William Whiting. It's printed by Rio Grande Press. That's RIOGRAND. Press.
Right. It sounds like an old book. We might be able to get that.
This is the guy who advised Lincoln on how to use the war powers.
Right. So that book is probably now, we could probably get that in a PDF book.
You can get it on Amazon for like $12.
Yeah, we might be able to find an electronic copy for free, though, and put it up and give it out for free. We've got
let me just elaborate a little bit on the War Powers Act. Okay.
Huh?
Can I elaborate a little bit on the War Powers?
Oh, yeah. Go right ahead. Sure.
We're under war powers now, okay? We've been under war powers. A lot of patriots will say we've been under war powers since 1933, and that is pretty much true. But Washington used them to bring in the federal judiciary to subvert states' rights, okay? He did that to bring in the banking and the federal judiciary. Okay, these acts, okay, what we're under now in this country, we are under conquest, okay? And conquest, under the rules of conquest, okay, a nation is allowed to exist as it normally does, okay, as far as its own rules, its common law, under the discretion of the occupying power, but pretty much under the discretion of the president. Okay? That's what we're under now. And according to this book, okay, anything passed under war powers, I'm talking legislation, okay, and peacetime, that's the status of what we are in, okay, are polar opposites. In other words, if we were to repeal the war powers, okay, and go into a peacetime government, we would have to change all the legislation ever passed under war powers to go back to peacetime government. Okay, and I don't think that's ever going to happen, okay, according to this book. It's extensive. It's, you know, there's a lot of footnotes, and you have to do a lot of reading, you know, and you have to do a lot of research. Okay.
Just to let everybody know, I found it online. There is a PDF form of it. I just put it out in the text chat.
Be careful of the PDF stuff you find online.
Okay.
Because with a lot of legal dictionaries, which you can find online, as opposed to legal dictionaries that you get in print, a lot of stuff is taken out.
Okay. Well,
and I don't know if they do that for you know for expediency or what you know or. Or censorship,
right.
You know, but it's probably better to get the text.
All right. Well, we'll be careful about it. You know, money is tight, and there's a lot of reading that people need to do if they can find the time to read, and everybody should find some time to read.
That is what we should do.
Yes.
That is what we should do. Okay.
We have you know, I don't know how many PDF books you know up on our website. I mean, we have all the great books. We've got also autobiographies. We got one by Washington. We got one by Benjamin Franklin. We got one by Thomas Jefferson.
Is anybody aware of the fact that all of the founding fathers who took office as the president, who took office as Congress, as in the House and the Senate, all took office as British subjects, according to the Constitution?
Have been what?
Well, the Constitution specifically states in requirements to hold office. Say, for instance, the president, okay, has to have lived in the United States for 13 years.
Well, for the president, you have to be born here, except for there was...
You have to have lived in the United States for 13 years.
Well, back
not
then,
born.
Yes. Right.
No, not born. No, it never changes. It's legal. It stands.
Well, I'll have to look into that. I understand. In order to be the president of the United States, you have to be natural born. And I don't know.
No, you have to have lived in the United States for 13 years.
No, to run for office maybe, but not to run for president. President must be natural born. I think it's the only office requirement.
No, it's not. There's three. There's a few of them. I have a Constitution here in front of me, yeah. And for Senate, you have to have lived in the United States. Hold on a second. Let me finish, please. The Senate says 9 years in the United States, and to hold office in the Congress, in the House of Representatives, 7 years. Okay? Now, the Constitution was signed in 1787, but the United States was recognized in international law through the Treaty of 1783. It was recognized as a nation. So you might want to take, you could take either that date or you could take the 1787 date. Now, okay, Washington, the only president that could be legally hold office, okay, would be born in 1801, right? Would have been elected president in 1801.
You're talking about a natural born.
No, I'm talking about the qualifications for to hold office
as president,
okay. As president, or a member of Congress, or the House, or the Senate.
Yeah,
when we signed the Constitution, everybody that took office, as far as the president, a senator, or a congressman, all broke the laws of the Constitution right from day one.
That I don't know. I'd have to look into that to see.
I'm going to read it for you. I could read it for you right now.
Well, I'll research it myself, and you can.
Well, anybody out there research it. Just get a copy of your Constitution and get it.
But the key thing here is not so much important on what happened back then on people that maybe someone got into office before the time limit was required of being an individual as a natural born. But I do know in the beginning of the country, they made an exception. But as time went on,
where did they make that exception?
Now, I'm going to research this again to make sure. I've never really researched this. I picked this up from reading. Now I'm going to back to see and double check myself, and maybe next week I'll either make a correction or I'll confirm the fact that the president has to be natural born at this point. That's the key thing we're talking about now today. You know, as far as John Adams or George Washington or Jefferson, any of those guys that ran for president. I don't know. Are you saying there was some default with those people?
Yes.
Okay, well,
they could not have held office legally under the Constitution.
Okay, well, they did, and they did good for the country.
So
and
why
I don't know if
legal
or illegal, but I don't understand the reason to bring the conversation
up. Okay,
well,
here's the deal. Everybody's talking about the Constitution on these Patriot sites, okay? But I seem to think, from what I have read, and this does not make me a commie or a liberal or, you know, a conservative.
Right.
I just want to know the way things are.
Yeah,
I've been trying to find out the way things are, and you know what? They're not the way they are presented to us.
Yeah, but I have to say, you know, George Washington was an important figure in our country, and the things he had to say and the things he'd done was so important. And same thing with Jefferson. Yeah, they were men. They had faults, and yeah, there may have been some things wrong. I don't know, and yeah, we should. But the thing is I don't understand the purpose of the conversation on that. I mean,
what I'm saying to you is, okay, everybody's holding up the Constitution as
well,
it's a sacred thing, okay? And I used to believe this myself.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I really did. I think it's
a fraud. I'm not holding up the Constitution for my rights or anything. I'm holding up my inalienable rights, and I'm saying the Constitution was written for the United States of America to put them on notice. Now, it is true in that Constitution, we the people ordained and established a set of principles and requirements of the people who run for office, and they're found within the U.S. Constitution. And then, of course, we attached the Bill of Rights to that because the idea was, well, we better make some points that don't screw around with these very
important rights. Are you aware that the Bill of Rights is a separate document, right?
Yes, yeah.
It didn't amend anything in the Constitution.
I understand that, but
okay.
what it did is it listed out and put the government into a box and said, don't screw around with our guns. Don't try to
use
our religion. But it doesn't matter. The point.
It matters for the states.
Right.
Bring the Constitution in, not as an individual, not as say like you or me. I can't bring the Constitution into court.
Well, the point.
The states can.
The point is this: when I go to court, and they want to know what my rights are, all they have to do is ask me, and that's the bottom line. It's called a court of record. I'm a sovereign individual. I control the court, and I'm the judge. That's what a court of record is. And every individual who understands as one of the people.
I agree with you on the court of record.
Okay. Well, that's what I'll tell you what my rights are. And one of my rights is I can have a gun without a permit. That's one of my rights. Just one. Okay. I got lots of rights. Now, it may be true that I may have gone out to get a permit because I can't afford to be in jail all day long, but that doesn't take my rights away. And I'm going to fight for that right soon. Very soon, we're going to make some huge changes here.
But under whose jurisdiction? Yours as a living human being?
My jurisdiction.
Or under theirs?
No, my jurisdiction.
Okay, I just wanted to get that straight.
Here's the point. We the people ordained and established. I'm the owner of this country. The government doesn't have the opportunity or any kind of authority or right to judge over me from a judge's point of view. If I commit a crime and I violate another human being, ultimately, that judge isn't going to decide on me either because the jury's going to decide.
Well, I disagree on the we the people thing. The we the people is very specific.
Well, I'm one of the
people. In English language, the way they wrote the Constitution was a capital W, small t, capital P.
Okay?
It was very specific.
So what's your
point? If they wanted it to be representing everybody, they could have said we, capital W, for instance, the way you start off a sentence, the small p people of the several states, but they didn't.
Right, but you see,
you know, they made it very, very specific.
We had government by consent.
Listen, every state had its constitution before the federal constitution.
That's right.
Sovereign, and they agreed to enter into this corporate United States. but they didn't give up their rights.
Corporate is key.
There is some certain
things. And I mean, that was understood, but you see what they're doing is they're blurring, they're trying to get rid of state sovereignty.
I think we got rid of state sovereignty with the Judiciary Act in 1789.
No. We gotta stop there. Whoa. No, they can say they got rid of it with any kind of an illegal act or decision, but they can't just get rid of it. The states always understood and that they were sovereign. They're in here as long as they're not suppressed. The people are sovereign above the state. The state doesn't get to decide anything about me whatsoever. Now, I just recently heard that.
Where do you cite that, though? I'm not going to cut your legs out from under you. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm into having a good conversation.
Where do I cite what?
Where did they state that you have – well, you just said that sentence, right? Where did they state that?
Oh, I don't care what they state.
No, it was stated, listen, it's stated in the Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
Declaration of Independence is not law.
It is a huge document. That document is our founding document.
Not enumerated are given to the people respectively. So in other words, the Constitution, we're not under the Constitution. We're outside of the Constitution. The Constitution was supposed to be the chain on the government enumerating their rights. And all the rest of
the rights. Right, the federal government's rights over the states. And only the states could bring that action into court. Right? You can't. I can't.
Only the states could bring which action into court?
Only the states can petition in the Constitution. You as an individual cannot bring that into court.
Oh, I never bring the Constitution into court. What I bring into court is my rights. And I'll let them, if they want to know what my rights are,
like
all they have to do is ask me and I'll tell them what they are. Because, you see, my rights is to do anything I want to do, to own anything I want to own, to act in any way I want to act, providing I don't injure another individual. That includes
the minds of a
minor or something.
See, that's what I'm talking about. See, what you just said, can you do that without license from the government?
Absolutely. I don't need a license to drive a car, and I don't need a license to carry a gun.
Commercially, yes. Commercially, if you're not driving commercially.
I agree.
Yeah.
If I get into a problem driving a car, okay, and you get into court, I wasn't driving a motor vehicle. I was driving an automobile, okay? And if they want to make a big deal, what the difference is, the big deal is one is commercial, the other one isn't.
Well, if you want to
expose their fraud and say, well, look, you're stuck under certain rules because you had a driver's license, and I'll say, no, I had a driver's license for the purpose of when I want to drive a commercial vehicle, not driving my automobile, but this cop required my driver's license, so I had to obey him and produce it, but it had nothing to do with what I was doing at the time when he gave me a ticket, okay? And that's my position. Now, that argument's not going to come up. It won't come up.
They won't let it come up, right?
They won't bring the fraud up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to argue a point, don't bring it up. But you fight the battle by being one of the people. And if it's a legislated court, which I don't think any of the traffic courts are, but if it's a legislated court...
Is it a court of record, the traffic courts?
Court of record.
They are courts of record?
All legislated courts in the state of New York are courts of record.
I'm from New York. We have like 6 constitutions, though, don't we?
Well, no.
Anytime we amend the constitution, it's a new constitution.
Right.
Is that the way we look at it?
The last major one change was in 1938, but they made a few changes since then, I believe. But, yeah, I think you're right. We did have quite a few of them.
But once they amend it, it becomes a new constitution, right?
Exactly.
Well, yeah, I guess so, yes.
Yes. It does.
Okay, yeah, it's very confusing. That's
right.
You know,
remember, look,
no,
we have
once it's amended, it's the new constitution.
Right.
And there's stuff in our constitution that we should change. New York
right.
has some squirrely
but
stuff.
But we don't want to play around with that until we get in power. Once we get in power, we will correct that. Power.
But how can you get in power? See, that's my whole problem.
Right.
I used to run with the Tea Party, okay,
uh-huh.
in New York. And I got out of it because, you know, I just felt fed up with the whole situation. Okay, but I'll give you a few examples about how people don't know what we're under, okay, like the Tea Party. Okay, they're talking about, you know, liberty and conservative and limited government, but
yeah,
they're around and saying, don't fuck with my Medicare. You know what I mean? Or Social Security. And I also went down to the OWS protest at Liberty Park. I'm from New York. I'm from Brooklyn. I went right down there, and I walked up to a woman who was holding, she had a table, you know, it was all Marxist literature, and I went up to her and I asked her, politely, like I am now talking with you guys, I said, are you aware that we brought in all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto? And she said, no, there's rich people here. And I was like, that's a bunch of crap. You know, I didn't go out to argue with her. I said that to myself. I was like, wow, that's a bunch of crap. We brought in all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto in this country. And you
well,
can start
you,
out.
You are right. We've moved to that position where all the planks are in place. You're absolutely right. And
so how can
again,
we argue
again,
for the Constitution
for the
when
that's for the citizen.
When we are legally in those realms?
If
you know what?
Yeah, look, there are two things. First of all, let's look at it from the
I'm having
judicial.
A problem here. You know what, you let's know what
look
I mean?
At, well, I'm trying to answer your question.
Okay,
let's look
cool.
at it from the judicial process first. The judicial process requires understanding. It requires boning up on the process and
can
understanding
I ask you a question
what liberty is. I'm going to try to make the points. What do you want to say?
Understanding. When you say you understand, that doesn't necessarily mean, like me and you, we're talking and having a conversation.
Right.
You understand what I mean?
But there's a legal game they play on that word.
Right, but
I'm
when
not,
you talk
I'm
to a judge
fact,
and you say you understand,
but
you,
I'm not
you say you, you are subject to all their private law.
Okay, I understand that too. But I'm not using that word to say I'm standing under. Forget that argument. And most people don't even realize what we're talking about on that, but maybe the people in this room do. But
most
my
don't,
point,
no,
I'm
they don't
regular
know.
Language as we normally would talk, and I'm talking about people understanding what liberty really is. If people, all people have to do is understand what liberty is and then say to themselves, okay, I got to relearn what I understood about this and spend 3 or 4 months, and if everybody did that, they would be free. It's all a matter of challenging jurisdiction.
My contention is that I don't think we've ever had liberty.
You
know,
this battle,
you
right.
get
battle.
Your car, right? You go to work, right? You work for a living. You buy a car. Why can't you just drive in your
I probably have more liberty than most people, even though I have to fight for it more than most.
See, that's
because
what I'm saying. You only have
to
fight
point.
For it.
If you want to talk, I'll be quiet. When you're done, then I'll talk. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm not looking to argue with you. I'm just saying if we had real liberty, okay, we would just be able to open up a business, drive in our cars, teach our kids, you know, without any license from the government.
Well, we do have that, but people don't understand we have that. See, if
they
you
don't,
exercise. You know,
that
you
is
don't
the problem. You're right. You're absolutely right on that.
If you don't secure your jurisdiction, then you're under all that horseshit. That horseshit is all for the 14th Amendment citizen. That's what
right, that right. That's exactly right.
That's what people are starting to find out. I mean, the reason that you're under that stuff is because of the way we conduct ourselves. Listen, income tax is not unconstitutional. It's unconstitutional.
Neither is martial law. Martial law is constitutional.
Okay, but let's answer how we can solve the problem.
You volunteer into it, and you
volunteer is the correct.
Volunteer
that is exactly it.
Okay,
and
so let's solve the problem. We have to make this easy.
You'll be held to the standards just like you do owe it, and so that is starting to come out now. But it's still, you know, this business about whether it's legal or lawful. That's all going to go away. It has to go away eventually because listen. We should not be splitting hairs about legal and lawful. And all this legalese is nothing more than a ruse to keep us slaves. I mean,
me and you, we don't want to split the hairs. But those people in power who legislate, they split the hairs.
A lot of
are we
going to
get over that?
A lot of them don't even understand what they are. They're slaves also. They haven't seen a free man in many, many years. And you know, the guys on the top, the few elite, they understand this business because they're writing the language. And we can tell by the way they write the language.
That's
but,
right.
See,
they write it. That's right.
The Social Security number before you're even in the age of reason. That's fraud. It's fraud because you didn't ask for it. They didn't tell you that when you got that number, you were giving up certain rights.
You want to hear something about Social Security number?
Let me make. Let's stay back. I don't want to get off subject here. Let's stay on point.
Okay.
Because I got to shut down the recording shortly, and I like to finish this conversation before I shut it down.
I'm enjoying this conversation, by the way.
But and we can continue after we shut down the recording. But I don't like the recording much longer than an hour and a half, and we're going to be going on 2 hours on this one. A couple of things. You know, these are Supreme Court rulings, and you got to understand the people up in the Supreme Court. We have a lot of friends up there. We've always had friends. We got enemies too, but we can control the enemies by U.S. codes. And but the bottom line is here's a U.S. Ruling, and this is an old one. It's Mayberry versus Madison.
Right,
and they
have
all
right.
laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Okay, so. Laws, statutes aren't necessarily laws. Matter of fact, statutes are not laws to the people. They're laws only to the bureaucrat. Let me finish my point because I want
okay.
to try to tie this whole thing together here.
Mm-hmm.
Self versus Rahay. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's Rhay. This is another U.S. Supreme Court ruling. And they said that the common law is the real law, the supreme law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
The codes, the rules, the regulations, the policies, and the statutes are not law. Okay? Now, if people understood what that meant, okay, Judge Bork said 80% of the people in prison are there because they opened their mouth. In other words, he gave them jurisdiction. Okay? And that's where the battle begins. Now, we can save the republic by making the battle in the courts, and we are doing that because it has to be done there also. But that could take years to do, and we don't have years. Now, there is a political process that we're working on, and we could take it back literally overnight once we take political power. The question is how do we take political power? Now, I don't know if you're familiar with our website, newyorkcommittymen.org, but we have a process. We have laid out a plan on how to take political power. And we have a ruling coming down from the Supreme Court, the New York State Supreme Court. We just argued our case before the appellate court here up in Albany. I think the third district or the second. But in any event, we're up there. They'll be setting the ruling down probably in the next 2 weeks, which we do intend on winning. I'm pretty confident we're going to win it. And at that point, we will take control of the political process in the entire state of New York in both parties, because this was not a game of politics. This was a game of this was the people taking control of both Republican and Democratic parties. Now, once we do that, then we become what's called the consentors. Okay, we read about the consentors in the Declaration of Independence. And the Declaration of Independence is as important as the Magna Carta and the Constitution. And
I don't think the Magna Carta
it's
holds.
Not flawless, huh?
I don't think the Magna Carta holds.
Oh, absolutely. Without the Magna Carta, we're done.
Well,
that's the whole argument. Matter of fact, maybe we'll talk about the Magna Carta next week. We can't talk about it now. Magna Carta is the first piece of written anything written on common law. Magna Carta is the first common law document, and it is so important. We get our jury from that. We get our grand jury from that. We get our sheriff from that. Everything that's important to us, it comes from the Magna Carta, and we'll talk about that next week. But I want to finish off on what and how we can do it, take back the political process. We're going to do that if we get our ruling the way we think we're going to get it in the next 2 weeks. We will take the process in the next 2 to 3 weeks, and we will make changes in this state that you won't believe. And we've been talking about that for the past 6 weeks. If you go back and listen to our earlier episodes, episode number 7, I think.
I will.
6 or 7. And
are you guys aware, excuse me for 1 second, I want to speak to something about sheriffs.
Yeah.
A few months ago, maybe 2 or 3 months
in
the state of Delaware, the Attorney General, which is Joe Biden's son, took the arrest powers away from the sheriffs in that state.
Yeah, he couldn't do that.
Well, that's what I read.
Well, that's because they let him do that if he did, but he didn't do that. He can't do that.
But that is a very big thing, right? That's a huge thing. Because the sheriff can arrest CIA, they can arrest FBI.
President, anybody, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And they cannot take the sheriff away. If they did, it just means that they want to
arrest powers away.
Process to the point of either communist or or Nazism over there.
Well, we're on communism here in this country right now, without a doubt.
Right? It's not, we have a great government. The problem is the people in the government are communists and Nazis. They've been infiltrating us for the last 50 years or more, and we have a serious problem.
Well, I go back a little further than that.
We will correct this problem in New York State literally overnight once we take control, because once we become the consentors of the people, nobody will get on. Nobody will be able to stop us. The judges will obey us. The politicians will obey us. And anybody who goes to Congress that we send out, and if they disobey us, they're going to be forewarned. As soon as you hit the border of New York State, you will be arrested by one of those sheriffs.
Well, I just want to know. I want to wish you guys luck in what you're doing.
I hope you jump in.
The platform for the Republican Party under Lincoln was written by socialists and communists.
You may be right on that. I'm not going to argue against that.
Yeah, no, I'm not sure to cut the legs out from anybody, man. You know,
Lincoln was a problem, but you know, nevertheless, there were some good things about Lincoln too. I don't know how much Lincoln understood how much he was used and what was going on. But before we go any further, let me end the conversation as far as the recording is concerned. I want to shut the recording off. We can continue.
Okay, good talking to you guys, man.
But we'll continue to talk. You don't have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to shut the recording off, so hang on one second.
No problem.
And for people who are listening and are recording, hopefully they'll come back to visit us next week. But let me end the recording.